All right, so my name's Jason. If you are from Region 2, I'm your Region 2 Policy Representative on the Executive Policy Committee for Work-Based Learning. I'm very honored to be here, very honored that you've chosen to come to this session. And we're gonna talk a little bit about a partnership that that was built in my community between myself, a local employer, as well as a post-secondary institution. And if you came today for Profundities. I don't have those to offer. It's a really simple program. It's a really simple blueprint. It was designed to be implemented and leveraged and moved around. So it is literally designed for you to pick up, take back to your location, find an employer, find a post-secondary institution, and build this partnership. So again, if you're looking for like super brilliant concepts, you're probably going to be disappointed. It's really simple. And it's funny to me how much attention it's gotten, but I think the attention has been because it's been successful and we put students in the workforce, and it's gotten attention because the employer is happy. And if you've worked in work-based learning long enough, you understand keeping the employer happy, learning to nurture those relationships is one of the hardest things to do. Okay, worried about giving, I use this term tongue-in-cheek, giving the employer a lemon, you know? And making sure the employer doesn't have a bad experience. That's kind of how this was designed. So if you are interested and you want to connect, you can scan this with your phone. I put it up toward the end. It basically adds, you have to click Save Contact twice, but then scroll down and make sure you click Create New Contact if you're on an iPhone. If you're on an Android, I can't help you. I don't know what those look like. But Add contact, or save contact, add contact, then scroll to the bottom and click create new contact, and then look, I'm not a big enough deal to have a school cell phone, so that's my personal cell phone there. So you have access to me at any point in time. One of my biggest complaints is when I go to a conference and someone stands up and they want me to listen to them, but then afterwards they don't want to engage with me and help me implement what they've done. Now obviously, look, this is a big room, so I can't be your personal one-on-one consultant, but I will give you everything I have. I will help you implement this the best way I possibly can. So I'm here that a rising tide floats all ships. I want every work-based learning practitioner to be able to have the tools in their tool belt to be successful, the sharpest arrows in their quiver, so to speak. Anybody else need more time here? All right, I do tend to talk quickly, to talk fast. I'll try to watch the pace of my speech. Now, I'm also really active on LinkedIn. I'd love to connect with you on LinkedIn. That's where I prefer you request the recording, and I can send you the link to that recording as well. I'm going to use, just for this presentation, I went ahead and I'm going to denote some points on here with hashtags. I'm not necessarily going to talk about those hashtags, but hashtags are important to me and how I communicate with my employer, specifically work-based learning, apprenticeship, access. Now, my favorite three are this: access to talent, talent retention, and talent pipelines. I'm going to mention those a lot because that's what employers want. Access to talent is a competitive advantage. They retain that talent, and once I give them access and they retain that talent, now they have a talent pipeline. They have access to an untapped segment of the labor market, and they can begin to fill their workplace workforce needs. So you'll see these hashtags throughout the presentation. It doesn't really mean anything other than just showing you where my mind is placing these in the equation of value to the employer, okay? So we're gonna start off with this. Let me say this, one quick caveat. I will kind of switch in and out of saying CTE, which is for every other state in the country, and CTAE, which is for Georgia. Georgia is the only state that has A, but I will code switch, I don't mean to. I try to stay with CTE, but if I do see CTAE, it's the same thing, we just have AG in ours, all right? So here's the need. As a director of work-based learning, I needed dynamic placements for my work-based learning students, specifically youth apprenticeship students, okay? That was what I needed and what I was looking for as I took over this program. Ace Electric, the employer, they needed skilled labor during a critical labor shortage. They needed access to talent. That's what they needed. Access to talent, people they can bring into their company and train and retain. That's what they're looking for, especially in the commercial and electrical construction field. They were saying for every one we hire, four leave. And the people who are close to retirement in our workforce, they're 6 years away from retirement. We do not have enough people to replace our leadership. Now, here's something that's important, and moving forward, Here's something that's important. It takes a company that has vision. And I'll give you a real quick example of what I mean by this. So I was taught this at a very young age by a guy who was mentoring and discipling me. And what he said was this: you want to address BBs on the horizon, not cannonballs off the bow. And what he means is, if you're looking out off the bow of your ship and you see something coming towards you and you say, that may be a cannonball, let me wait and see. And you wait until it gets close enough to see that it's a cannonball, your ship is going to be sunk. But you look out far enough and say, there's a BB on the horizon, let me move my boat in case it's a cannonball. Okay? That's what Ace did. They said, we're looking 6 years out and we're losing enough people, we're getting enough people, and we don't have anybody else to replace the ones who are going to be retiring. So they had vision. That's a big part of the equation. And sometimes you can't create that. Okay, now my friend and myself are doing another session tomorrow at 8 a.m. It's talking about how to help recruit and recreate those employers. So that may be something you're interested in. And then Wiregrass, what we call in Georgia TCSG, our post-secondary, it's a trade school, it's a technical school. What they needed was to be responsive to the needs of industry, which is part of their charter, respond to the needs of industry in your local community, produce workforce for them to be consumed, but also they needed enrollment and through dual enrollment opportunities. So you can see what's happening. This is the need for all, this is the epistemology of what we're doing with this partnership. This is the base that we're gonna build everything from this partnership. Now, step one, ACE came to us and said, look, there's a critical labor shortage in this field. For everyone who enters for leave, our project managers are near retirement, kind of already covered that, and we need a customized curriculum for post-secondary institution. Meaning, there are two electrical programs at our TCSG, but neither one of them met the needs specifically of Ace Electric. So Ace Electric pointed up and said, hey, we'll build you a lab if you build us a custom curriculum so that we know everybody who comes out of that program can walk right onto the floor at Ace Electric, and we know because we built the curriculum, and so that's kind of where we're going. Step two was Ace Electric went to Wiregrass just like that, and they said, we need a customized curriculum to make sure everybody who comes out of here, we're losing four for everyone we get, but we need to make sure that the one we get can walk right into the workforce and work for us. Now, other electrical companies can hire these people. That's great. There is some transition. There is some coverage there. There's some overlap there, but they want to make sure that they worked specifically for Ace. And again, Wiregrass built this curriculum with what in Georgia we call their TCCs, those Technical Certificates of Competency, okay? ACE also needed to provide funding for a new lab, and Wiregrass received the facilities and partnership that was going to help drive enrollment. Now, but here's the problem. Neither one of these people, so we basically have built a gun, but they don't have any ammunition. They've got the programs, they've got the facilities, they've got the curriculum, but what do they still need? Access to talent. They need the students. Now that's where I come in. So this is the ribbon cutting of 2019. That's the lab that they built. Obviously it looks empty, but that's what it looks like when ACE is in the job site. That's what it looks like. It's metal studs, they're pulling wire, they're pulling, building conduit, doing all this stuff, right? So if you're interested, I'm not gonna cover this. If you're interested, the curriculum is here, and there is both a certificate, diploma, and a degree track for the students who wanna go work at the post-secondary school. Now, it's a very unique program in that we try to release students for two blocks. So I'm a 4x4 block, so we have four blocks. We try to release students for two blocks, meaning they get out of school at 11:23. 4 days a week, they go to work at Ace Electric. 1 day a week, they go to school for 4 hours. Ace Electric pays them to go to school like they're on the clock. Every time they pass a class or get a certificate or any kind of credential, because it's registered with the Department of Labor, they get a wage bump, a wage escalation. Every time they go, boom, boom, boom. So not just registered with my program in Georgia, they're also registered with the Department of Labor in Georgia and the National Department of Labor as a registered apprentice, which, by the way, if you didn't know, you can do that under 18. A lot of people say, you can't do that until you're 18. Not true. You can have a registered apprentice who is under 18. So here's the curriculum if you want to look at that. Now, here's step three. This is really where I come in. Ace Electric needed access to new skilled employees through my, and I had a solution. 3,400 students in my high school of an untapped segment of the labor market they didn't have access to, and typically thought we can't hire the students under 18. Well, I had to go in and do a little bit of educating and advocating for the fact that you can. If you didn't know that, OSHA doesn't care. They care about your safety rating. workers' comp doesn't care. They care about your mod rate. If your mod rate's too high, you really can't hire anybody, right? So they don't care about that. And as a matter of fact, if you go look, most states have exemptions from the hazardous occupations in the FLSA, the Fair Labor Standards Act. There are 17 of those listed. Georgia has exemptions from 7 of those. Meaning you can hire a student, not only can you hire a student, if an employer wanted to hire a student under 18, they couldn't do it in any of those 17 fields. But if they hire a student who's in a work-based learning program, they can hire students who are in 7 of those 17 hazardous occupations. If you're interested in that, I can send you Georgia's documentation. I'm sure your state has something very similar to that. But they need access to talent. Then, Wiregrass, they needed access to my students for dual enrollment opportunities, which Georgia's very tricky. Is anybody here from Georgia? Okay, so Georgia is a 50-50 Perkins split, which blows my mind, because half, if not more, of the students going to Wiregrass are high school students. So they're getting half the money, and half of their students are actually our students. Whole different conversation, but they needed access to talent to drive dual enrollment numbers, okay? Then this is where I came in. Take my students, I need dynamic work-based learning placements for my students. That's how I help solve Ace Electric's problem. And then extended dual enrollment opportunities for students to get credentialed, to get certified, to get those wage escalations for students at my high school. So you can see right now there's three parties, and is any party wanting? Is any party suffering? No one's having to acquiesce, or no one is having to consent or move away from what they want. Everyone is getting their needs met in the partnership. So I told you, no profundities here. This is literally just, what do you need? Here's what I need. What do you need? Let's work together and make this happen. So then we took that partnership, and we went to the Department of Labor and got them registered with the Department of Labor. Now, I did not do that part. That was done through the TCSG, or your local post-secondary institution, who are certified with the Department of Labor to actually do registered apprenticeships. They had to write that grant and stuff. I benefited from that, but that's kind of what was the next step. Okay, so now you're getting to see, I provide access to talent. Ace Electric retains that talent, trains that talent, and then when they do that, that student's been with Ace Electric, and here's the valuable point, for 2, sometimes 3 years, before Ace Electric's competitors even know who these kids are. Think about when most of these kids are targeted for employment. At the earliest, it's when they enroll in post-secondary school. And some of you are probably facing that same problem where students, when they enroll in post-secondary schools, they're immediately hired, and they say, well, we'll train you, we need the workforce, right? But a lot of times they're waiting until after they graduate. So if you're waiting until after you graduate a 2-year program and I'm giving you access to a 16-year-old as a junior, that's a 4-year gap between when you're working with someone and when your most fierce competitor even knows who they are. By that time, it's gonna be pretty hard to recruit them away from you, because they've been with your program for 4 years. They've been onboarded. They know the culture. They've probably gotten a few raises through this program and the relationships. I don't understand. I can't quantify it. But I cannot quantify that. What's the word I'm looking for? Loyalty of a high school student staying with a company when that company invested in them as a 16 and 17 year old. Because these kids know not every company is doing this. So they value that, and they've been very loyal to stay with this company. Now, here's the how. So now we're going to get into how we did it. So that was the why, what we did, or the what, excuse me. Now we're going to talk about the how. ACE communicated the type of student they were seeking. That's important. They said, Jason, we do not need honor roll students. As a matter of fact, we would prefer the students who may be the lower academic students who really need us, because that makes it a little easier for us to retain them in the long term. So that also includes if you're really into equity and I'm actually offering these programs to students who need them the most. And that's where it really becomes something that kind of will pull at your heartstrings. So they communicated the type of student they were seeking. They communicated their level of commitment to the program by putting their money where their mouth was and building the lab for the post-secondary institution. And then they communicated their intent and scale, or their intent for the scale and scope of that program, by saying, we're committed. We're putting our money where our mouth is. We're going to build this program. The how for me, I called these programs, construction, automotive, ag, engineering, architecture, and drafting. I called those students to our auditorium, and I did the pitch. Here's the program. Here's the company. Here's what they want to do. Here's the possible outcomes for you. If you want to go to college, may not be the best program for you, but we'll still take you in the interest profile. Did the whole pitch. I did it just took a 20-minute pitch. Wasn't super long, but a 20-minute pitch. Then I had Chromebooks down at the front, and I said, look, if you're interested, just come down. It's a 3-question survey. What's your name? What teacher did you come here with? And then how do you want me to get a hold of you? What's your preferred method of contact? And so I just did a little interest form, super simple. And then students came up and signed up through a Google form. Initially, the first program, I got 76 responses, which I wasn't expecting that. And again, I know that doesn't sound like a lot, but 76 responses. But remember, now here's what I had to do. I had to make sure that I vetted these students really, really well, because this is my proof of concept. I can't send a kid who's on the fringe the first cohort. I can't do it. Because if that kid screws the pooch, now they're not going to want to come back to me for talent, right? I've got to make sure I put the best kid. So I had to be really, 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 really picky, and you'll see how picky in a second. So I'm saying that because you're about to see how quick these numbers went down. My kids are not bad kids, okay? I'm not a bad teacher. But I was very picky in making sure I built this cohort to be of the best caliber students, at least initially. So 76 students, after I referenced discipline, I went down to 28 students. Again, I don't have serial killers in my school. I just was like getting rid of kids who had hat violations, who had consistent, maybe they're wearing a hat, maybe they're consistently targeting the first block. I cut them for that, because if I can't trust you to go to class, I can't trust you to go to work. Then I referenced their attendance and cut it from 28 to 21. I don't know why there's a standard of deviation of 7 here in all these, but from 28 to 21. Then I went to teacher recommendations and went from 21 to 14. Again, there's that 7 again. I don't know why. So I went from 76 to 14 students in about 3 days. Now I've got a manageable number. Took these 14 students, and then we went on a facility tour. Took a field trip to Ace Electric. And why do I do that? I want you to see what it is you're going to be doing. What are you going to be doing in Ace Electric? It's not all, you know, butterflies, cotton candy, and kittens. Like, it's hard work. You're going to be dirty. You're going to get sweaty. And I had two students who went on the field trip who said, you know what, it ain't for me. And I was like, good. I'm glad, because I don't want to put you with Ace, because those two students would have done really, really well in the interview. And they probably would have gotten the job and then gone there and quit, and it would have hurt my proof of concept. So, again, I was very picky about who I admitted into this program. And then from the facility tour, we conducted personal interviews, meaning that after I vetted discipline, attendance, I got the teachers to recommend the students anonymously, not give the student a form and say, bring this back to me. Because what do teachers do then? They're scared to be honest. I contacted the teacher, and I did it verbally. If you want true feedback from your teachers, don't ask for an email, because what's an email? Proof. It's proof. It's a record. It is a requestable correspondence. So if a student misses out on something like this, and the parent gets mad and they want to find out what was said, that becomes something that can be subpoenaed. Ask them. Do you? And here's the question, really simple question. It wasn't a survey. I went up to the student and I said, ma'am, do you want Johnny to represent your program in industry? Yes or no? One question. You've seen him. Do you want him to wear the badge of your program in industry? And very quickly they said, oh, no, not Johnny. Or, yeah, he's great. I want him to represent my program. One question survey, or one question response. So then I conducted personal interviews with those 12, and I made some additional cuts. Got down to 9. Told the students we're only taking 5 students, so 4 of you are not going to make it. Okay? Traditional, norm referenced. There's 12. 3 of you are the bottom 3. You're gone, right? So that's how we went through that. Now, you can see specifically here, if you look, like, I would cut students for hat violation. They got in a fight. Tobacco. Now, does Ace Electric care about whether these kids are vaping or using? No, probably not, but I did. I want to make sure that I got the best quality. And you'll see later that with the subsequent cohorts, Ace said, hey, Jason, lighten up. We want to find the diamonds in the rough, okay? And so that we want more kids, and it was very, very productive. But you can see, like, something simple here. This student took a picture of another student without their permission. Okay, can't make good decisions. I cut them. We did loosen up. I promise you. I'm not a jerk. Yes, sir.
Is hat an acronym, or are you literally saying it?
No, literally, he wore a hat in the building and refused to take it off. And I was like, if you can't follow instructions, you're done.
Oh, okay.
So hat violation, like, literally, He wore a baseball cap in.
Maybe it was like an Auburn, Alabama hat.
No. Well, now I'm an Auburn alum. I don't know if you know that or not. So yeah, if it was an Auburn hat, I would let it slide. If it was an Alabama hat, you're going to ISS. So just an example of vetting, right? I took the interest survey, and as they got crossed out, I would just filter. I have a yes or no category drop down. I'd filter the no's out, and I'd just get smaller and smaller number of yeses. And then once I got to this point, I would go in and I'd put my comments. All you can see, all these teachers were recommended. These were all students who were recommended by their teacher, but I would go in and I would cut. This student wasn't driving age, vaping at lunch, pictures of another student. So really simple stuff, like not egregious, but I want to make sure I sent the best student possible. Now there's the 9 students, or there's the 12 students. Hold on, who's that? 1, 2, 3, 4. Yes, the 12 students who went on, who stayed on after the field trip. Okay, 12 students, really excited about those students. Here's pictures of that field trip where they learned, again, that you feed high school students, they're going to love it, but they showed them how to pull conduit, what it looks like to work in this field, right? So it was a really good field trip, really unique and interesting. So here's the response in vetting. Ace Electric originally plans to take 5 students in the program. So I told them that. 3 of y'all or 4 of y'all are gone. They're only going to take 5. 9 of you are here. The bottom 4, I think I said 3 earlier. I'm not that bad at math. I'm sorry. The bottom 4 of you are gone. All right, they scheduled an interview with all 9 students that were recommended to LHS, that we recommended to them. I then pulled them out and did some immediate intervention on how to build a resume, job skills, how to look people in the eye, how to network, how to sell your skills without seeming haughty and arrogant. How do you advocate without being obnoxious? Did all the stuff that we do every day, right? Because these students, again, aren't in my program. I pulled them from other programs. I'm recruiting them, so they have not gotten any of this intervention from me curriculum-wise. Then I put them back into the cycle, and Ace Electric said, hey, we're only going to take 5, but we cannot differentiate between any of the 9, so we're going to hire all of them. And I was, okay, cool. All 9 were hired. Now, 1 did drop out because he was a foster student, or a student of the foster system, a foster kid, and they in Georgia, they get free college. And so he was like, college is the route I want to go, so he ended up dropping out. So I had, of the 9, all 9 started, 1 backed out, which I was fine with. Now, at this point, they're still not in my program. They go and they work full-time in the summer. Because after the vetting process, now they're going to put them through the paces and see who can keep up. And I was worried about this, especially when I got the phone call the first day, and they said, Jason, a lot of our project managers aren't wanting to take these kids. So we're sticking them here. We'll let you know how this develops. So I'm thinking, oh, gosh, all this work, it's done, right? It's going to blow up in my face. Well, then they called back and said, hey, we got them placed. We think they're going to be okay. I got a phone call the next week, and my contact with the company said, it's funny how things turn around. It went from quickly being, we don't want to babysit high school kids, to, hey, can you send us the high school kids? You can take the temps and everybody else. And they're like, the kids want to work. They got something to prove. They don't know how to milk the clock yet. They show up on time. Like, they could do a good job. And they helped me establish the proof of concept that high school students can work in a manufacturing construction environment. We have to tackle that elephant in the room. It is possible. We can do that. So based on that caliber, they hired all 9 as full summer interns. And again, they're not in my program. They're not full-time employees yet. They're in the summer internship, putting them through their paces. Okay, so here's just a couple of things. This the summer internship, a little over 2,700 hours worked, 140 hours of overtime. About $28,000 of wages paid to these 9 interns over the summer. Some places you may live. We got Quitman, Tallahassee, Florida, Tifton, Savannah, Birmingham, Columbus, Ohio. These students didn't travel to Ohio, but the ACE does a lot of prefabrication, so they do construction places there. They'll prefab it in their place, they'll weld it, send it out, and then they'll ship it off so they can just drop it in and not have to assemble it on site. So this is where some of their work was done. ACE, yeah, 100%. ACE was like, that was where they put their money where their mouth was, right? They paid the wages. They said, this is our strategy to gain access to talent before our competitors. It's our strategy to retain that talent. And they paid them well. I want to say it was like $12 an hour, which at the time, this is pre-COVID. In South Georgia, $12 an hour in 2019, like right before COVID, but that was good. I mean, they think they started out now at $15. But then again, for uncredentialed students who are being apprenticed, that's a good wage in my area. It may not be, for those of you who are unionized, it may not be good wages But I don't have to fight with unions in my area, which makes my job a little bit easier. All right, so then the beginning of school. All 9 students were then selected to stay on as full work-based learning students. So then they all come into my program. After the summer internships conclude, 8 of the 9 enrolled as work-based learning apprentices. That one student backed out because he was a foster student. Okay. Then 7 of those 9 students enrolled at Wiregrass in that curriculum side of it. The other student still worked for ACE, but she was a band student. Okay. Now, you don't know much about my school. You don't mess with football, and you don't mess with band. And it's not that order. It's band first. Like, you don't mess with band. So she stayed in band, and so the other 7 students enrolled in both. They're in my program, and they were in the curriculum side at Wiregrass. Okay, 7 of those 9 students were also registered apprentices with the Department of Labor. And again, 2 of those 9 students. Now, here's the funny part. I mentioned earlier, I kind of buried the lead. The academic students wanted to do this. So 2 of these 9 students were pre-engineering, and ACE said, we'll take them in our engineering side because we have to go in and fabricate and extrude these things that are built and designed in our lab to spec on the job site. So we need kids who can come in and do AutoCAD and Revit and build these things out. So they had 2 of those engineering students. Now, except for the student, of those seven students, 5 were hired as full-time employees when they graduated. Those 2 engineering students did what? Went to college. Well, guess where they work now? 7. So with the exception of the student who was in band, you don't mess with band, and the student who backed out because he was a foster student, 100% conversion. Yeah. Of the eligible students who participated, and even if you really want to get like 7 of 9, I'm not good at math, but that's still a pretty good percentage. Especially for ACE Electric, because ACE, if you think about from their perspective, they created 7 full-time employees from scratch that their competitors didn't have access to, and is now working in, still to this day, working 5 years later with ACE Electric. Okay, there are the ones, this is the young lady who was in band, so she didn't come. Everybody else was hired full-time, everybody. So really unique program. And there's my 5 seniors. So it's a cool picture. Now, when you look at this, and here's something just, and again, I'm probably going to reveal a little bit too much personal information here about this. This young man right here, I won't tell you his name, even though he's graduated for FERPA issues, but that young man right there has taken some dual enrollment classes, so he's finished his certificate program, never paid for college a day in his life. I'm about to have a terminal degree. He makes more money than me, doesn't have a student loan payment, doesn't have a truck payment because he's got a company truck. And I said, student, what do you do with your money? And he said, Mr. V, whatever the hell I want to. And I said, okay. So that, all jokes aside, that's the type of freedom we give our students when we put them in a skilled trade. No payments, no overhead, making really good money. The same money of someone who's been to school his entire life, and he was 20 years old. That's flexibility. That's freedom. Yes, ma'am.
At Wiregrass, that was like the curriculum piece of it?
The curriculum piece, yeah. So they offered the post-secondary training. So they built the curriculum for ACE. The students would do 2 blocks of work-based learning, or 2 blocks of release. One work-based learning, 1 dual enrollment. 4 days a week, they would go to work. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday, they'd go to work. Thursday night, they would go to class. But they were still paid hourly to go to class.
Who taught the class and how did you pay the instructor?
Wiregrass taught the class. Yeah, so Wiregrass built the curriculum and opened the class to anybody who wanted to go, but it was built for ACE Electric and those ACE kids. So they had, I think, 10, 12 other people in that class. And so that's how it was built. And so that was Wiregrass. So again, all 3 parties are getting what they want, what they need. Yes, sir.
So the kids have their regular core classes in the morning or
versus
the
same
time? Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
And then in the afternoon they went on.
Yeah, so let me take that back. I will say, so for the most part, yes. This young man right here was one of the best cross country kids in the country. And so he had practice after school, And so he went into work. He was released first and second block. So he'd get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. He'd go into ACE and work until lunch and then come into school, go to 2 classes, and then go run after school. So so for the most part, yes. But when they're on campus is when they would take their academic classes. Okay? So here's the 5-way win. The 5-way win. One, it's great for industry and employers. Phenomenal for industry and employers. Okay? It's great for program instructors and enrollment. Now, here's a task you may have to overcome. And this is, again, part of what we're going to talk about tomorrow at 8 a.m. When you recruit for work-based learning, you're essentially taking the best student out of an area. I'm taking your best welding student and putting him in industry, right? And so you've got to learn how to get the teachers on board. I don't want to give you my best student because then I don't have enough enrollment to dictate my job. And the answer is, I'm going to turn that one student into 5 students because when I get him in industry, making good money, doing what he wants to do, he's going to become your best marketing agent. He's going to tell all of his buddies, I got this job through work-based learning out of the welding program, and they're going to start taking the welding program. And it worked. So you have to, it's great for the program, great for instructors, because what better thing to do for your teachers than to take the talent that they're building in their CTE labs and put them to work in industry and prove that that teacher is good because the kids are ready to go to work. That's the biggest shining gold star you can give your classroom teachers in your CTE labs is by putting their kids in an opportunity to succeed in industry. Phenomenal opportunities, okay? Great for the school system. Okay, schools love to promote. You may not be supported like you want to be supported in work-based learning, but your school will never miss an opportunity to celebrate your success. They'll celebrate it. They may not give you the resources you need to be successful, but they will certainly be like, oh, thank you. Here's the on the front page of the website, kids getting apprentices, right? They will take credit for your work, 100%. But also, it's great for CTE. See, there's the A, CTAE, and work-based learning programs. Okay, so now, I said the 5-way win. Who's missing from this equation? It's great for the students. Again, that young man, 20 years old, making as much money, more money, than his teacher, who's about to have a terminal degree at the time, with no overhead, no payments, no student loan debt, 20 years old, doing whatever he wants to do with his money, he told me. Okay? Now, there are some limitations to this model. We've got plenty of time. I'm going to go through this pretty quickly. Again, the slide deck is here for you. So I'm not going to cover all of these, but I want to be honest. Was this super, super easy? It wasn't all easy, and there's some limitations. One, students needed to have 2 release blocks. So students who didn't have the flexibility in their schedule only did the work-based learning part, didn't do, you know, moving forward would only do work-based learning. They wouldn't do the curriculum side. They could do that later, okay? Again, if not either work-based learning dual enrollment, they would need to be eliminated from that initial cohort, which we did. 2, they must have employers willing to work students under 18. That's a big deal. It's a big deal. Now, it can be difficult to build this into a vision at the initial setting. It can be very difficult to do that and convince an employer to do that. Now, there's a YouTube video. Again, that is yours. I created this for Georgia. So, funny story, some people at the DOE came and said, hey, Jason, how are you getting employers to hire students under 18? And again, lacking profundity, I said, I read the manual you gave me. And they looked at me like, what do you mean? I was like, HB 402, which in Georgia is an exemption from workers' compensation or a discount on workers' compensation and exemptions from hazardous occupations. If I can sell that, why would they not do that, right? So if you're interested, that is a video. I am nowhere in the video. I don't speak. You don't see me at all. It is literally my employers telling their story so that I can literally take that video, turn around, and play it to another employer who says, I'm not hiring a kid under 18. I'm like, okay, well, listen to your competitors who are and are whooping your butt in the industry because they're hiring all the kids out before you even know who they are. Now, I'm a gentle disruptor, but I'm never that aggressive with an employer. But that's what I'm really saying is these people are hiring the kids before you know who they are. So unless you start doing it, you're always going to be chasing them. Okay, that video basically walks them through the value of hiring students under 18. Access the video, it's on YouTube, go watch that. That link's there in the slide deck. 2, finding the demand from the, or filling demand from the employer. The downside of this program was once I filled ACE Electric's demand, they wanted more and more and more, and it became a full-time job. But our job, it boils down to workforce development for economic development for our community. That's what it really boils down to. And that means our job is to be yes people, Say yes, and then figure out how do you make it happen. Yeah, I can do that. Then you go home like, how crap am I going to do this? Like, fill the need. Recruit. You got to hustle. Okay? Especially if the program is initially successful. Okay? Recruiting the right type of student. Again, the vetting process was pretty unique, pretty intense. Especially that initial cohort. I want to make sure I put a proof of concept out that the employer was going to like and take. Vetting the student. It's hard. It's hard to look at a 16-year-old student and say, hey, man, I did way worse things in high school than I'm telling you came in. I mean, and I was honest. I said, look, the difference between my generation and your generation is that we didn't archive everything on the internet for people to see. Like, we did stupid stuff, too. We just didn't put it on TikTok and so we could archive it, right? But I was like, learn this. And some pretty cool success stories is I told some of these students who got cut, I said, apply again next year. And if you stay clean in your discipline record, I'll put you in the program. So now I've leveraged a successful program as a behavior intervention strategy for a student. That was what gets your administrators really on board. Time consuming, but it's essential. Communication between three large organizations, that's the hard one. You gotta get all three at the table, communicating together. If the need is great enough, that becomes lessened, okay? But if anyone starts becoming a glory hog, that becomes exacerbated. You can't be a glory hog with this. You gotta say, look, this is a three-way partnership, four-way if you talk about the Department of Labor, which, I mean, they signed the paper and gave us permission, but really, essentially, it's a three-way partnership. School, high school, post-secondary school, industry partner, okay? You gotta get buy-in from the teacher. I told you about that. Taking your best kids out of my program. You gotta advocate for that, right? Parents, my kid's going to college. You know how I communicate that? I tell them my student story. And also, I'll say, you know what's funny is, if I need to talk to my accountant on Friday at 3 o'clock, it's probably gonna wait until Monday. But you know who I'm not waiting to call on Monday if I need him at 4 o'clock on a Friday? My plumber, I ain't walking around in crap all weekend. And anybody else who has a skilled trade, because I can't do it myself, and HVAC, I live in South Georgia, I'm not gonna sweat, and here's what else I'm not gonna do. I'm not gonna call the HVAC guy, and I'm not gonna negotiate. I'm gonna say, fix it and send me the bill. I'm not asking you how much it costs, just get my AC running. That's how I talk to parents. You give your kids that kind of flexibility. Employers and employees, I don't wanna babysit high school students. Told you that attitude quickly changed when they saw the students could do the work, had a better attitude, showed up, and were eager to prove something. Even at a very early stage, they were very loyal for being included in this program. Establishing program protocols, that was a little difficult. And here's the bottom line. You don't know what you don't know until you learn it, and then you know it, right? I didn't know this was gonna be successful, but we built it, and now I know the program works. That's why I'm giving it to you. I know it works, you just have to find the right pieces to plug into the puzzle. Including students who want to go to college. That was initially something we didn't think was going to happen, but ACE was very flexible, brought in the two engineering students, and they've in turn brought them back and hired them full-time as well. Requires some flexibility and creativity. Here's some places we had to get real creative. Again, working with students under 18, had to get creative with that. Counting hours for apprenticeship students and Department of Laborship students at the same time. Now here's the pretty cool part about this partnership. When you think about students doing something once, they're working once, and they're getting credit through work-based learning as a grade. They're getting paid hours. And here's the part we hadn't talked about yet. If they're registered with the Department of Labor, the hours they work and are getting credit for school credit and work-based learning and getting paid for, are also counting toward their journeyman electrician. He's making so much money because he was a journeyman 2 months after he turned 19 years old. 20 years old, excuse me. He was a journeyman, and he was just turned 20. That's why he's making so much money. So he's doing the work once, getting paid for it, getting high school credit for it, getting college credit for it, and getting Department of Labor credit for it at the same time. That's working smarter, not harder. We conferenced in with Bill Krause from the Department of Labor, who then moved to the U.S. Department of Labor and is now retired. So he's a pretty unique follow on LinkedIn if you don't know him, Bill Krause. We had to get creative, and we talked with him about that, right? Andrew, my student, scheduled the student who was the All-American cross-country kid. He worked in the AM. ACE was fine with doing that. The two engineering students, hiring the academic students. Heavy academic focus. ACE took them anyway, put them in an academic area, okay? That was, again, not in the initial plan of this program, but ACE saw the value and said, let's try it, and that's good. There was no template, but guess what? There is now. This is it. Take it. It's your template. Use it. Build it. We built the template, and that's what part of it was for. We set the program how you want. If you don't have a post-secondary institution, okay, fine. You can still do this with your employers. If you got to find a post-secondary institution in a neighboring or contiguous county, do it virtual. We've proven that model works through COVID. We all bust our tails and did great things during COVID. We've proven that model works, okay? Or have the instructors come and teach them on the job site. There's a lot of ways you can tweak this, right? Recruiting and vetting. We had to get really flexible. Staying flexible. We had to get really creative and staying flexible, not getting rigid and that. Now, where you may get creative, if you don't have work-based learning, or if you have an underwhelming work-based learning program. Some of you may in here may be directors, or maybe your work-based learning coordinator is not really motivated to do this. Because it was work. It was work. So that may be where you need to get creative. You got to be your own advocate. You got to start small. I would recommend start small, build it. Don't try to build this massive program at the beginning. Start small and build it. Do what you can and do it when you can. Handpick students. It's okay to be selective. You're not telling students they're bad kids. You're just saying this is an exclusive program. And right now your merits don't. I'm all about meritocracy. I want students to have the merit to get in. And in the case they didn't, I would say, get this better and apply again next year. And again, then it becomes a leveraging tactic and a behavior intervention strategy. Handpick the students. Approach your advisory committee. Get them on board. Help them advocate for finding these people. No vision or industry and no obvious partners. Yes, that could happen. If you're from a very small rural area, you may not have a big partner who wants to do this. Okay? Then find the one person who does want to do it and make it happen. Set the proof of concept I don't care if it's the smallest employer in your community. Set the proof of concept and then leverage that with the bigger employers and then with the bigger employers until you get to the big fish who hires 10 kids a semester. Start small. Just make it work. Do whatever you can to make it work. Start small. Approach your advisory committee. Get help from them. Approach local government leaders, mayor, county commissioner, elected officials, senators, House representatives. They all sit on my board, and I was like, I need help getting this. And not only that, but they're also the first ones to ring the bell and give credit to this program. Chamber of Commerce, Industrial Development, your development authorities, Kiwanis meetings, Rotary meetings, tell this a story. Now, a good friend of mine from Alabama, and now this is a really Alabama saying now, he said it's a sorry dog that won't wag his own tail. Okay? Wag your tails. Build the program, make it work, and then tell people about it. It's not haughty. It's not arrogant. It's not me. I could have done all this work and the kids not done anything and the program would have gone nowhere. This is all about the kids, all about the employer. It's not about us. And then if you don't have a post-secondary institution, what happens? Connect with the closest technical college. Tell them, I can bring you students in dual enrollment. Here's the numbers I can guarantee. Make it financially worth their while to do so. Approach the Department of Labor. See if they can help. Okay? Now, that was us last December receiving that award. That's Greg Terry. He actually was a teacher of mine, like a neighbor teacher of mine at the time, who ACE, not only did ACE start hiring high school students, they started hiring our teachers away. So they actually paid, they came to him, he's like, I can't retire until the end of the year. And they said, we will buy your next semester away from you if you come work for us. And I was like, I got 9 years left, you want to buy mine? No, not yet. But so he actually runs the program now, and that was us at Vision receiving that award. So very proud of them. And again, the credit goes to ACE. It goes to ACE. Like, they had the vision to solve this problem and make it work. So with that, we've got about 7 minutes. Questions, comments, concerns, or you can leave and get to your next session, whatever you want. Yes?
In addition to the competencies and rapids, did you incorporate any like soft skills training or anything like that?
Ooh, yes. I prefer to call them employability skills because they're not soft, they're hard. Hard to get, hard to find, hard to teach, right? But yes, that is my curriculum. So when they came in the work-based learning, my job is I can't teach a student how to do electrical work. That's not my skill set, right? I'm a graphic designer. That's what I do. But I can teach employability skills. And so my entire curriculum is built on building the employability skills for them. And so that's another thing, in addition to the vetting that I offer the employers, is one, with work-based learning, you have increased leverage, not just their hours and their pay, but their grade. Two, you have me helping on the employability side as the instructor. And three, you have me built in as an evaluator. I'm like a middle manager, you don't have to pay. Because I'm coming out there watching the kids, making sure they're doing their job, making sure they're getting to work. If they don't get to work, I have some extra things I can do on the school side that you can't do as an employer. So that's kind of what we brought to the table in addition to just access to talent. Great question.